Welcome to our latest episode of Grow Science. Today, we're excited to be joined by Matt Shea, Chief Strategy Officer of cybersecurity company Mixmode. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you, Ben. I appreciate it.
Thanks for absolutely. Absolutely. Just to get started, can you tell us a little bit about Mixmode and your background?
Sure. So Mixmode is a AI-powered cybersecurity-focused company looking at novel attacks and handling large environments at very, very high scale. And so, as far as my background is concerned, I've been with Mixmode about, three and a half years now. And prior to that, I had roles in companies focused in, games and online distribution and other technology focuses.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. We've done quite a bit of work in the cybersecurity space. And really, I mean, just diving in, it's astounding at the number of attacks and the impact of the attacks. Can you speak a little bit about the challenges associated with today's cybersecurity landscape?
Yeah, no, you hit the nail right on the head. The cybersecurity teams out there are overwhelmed with not only the volume of attacks, but also the percentage of successful attacks that are working against their organizations and the ever evolving threat of, whether it's cyber criminals, whether it's nation states, whether it's insider threats, which would be kind of malcontents inside of an organization trying to steal data. The totality of what they're facing is pretty impressive. And things just got worse this last year with tools available to advance the art of creating new and novel cyber attacks. And so novel is a category of basically the new stuff that is unknown, that's designed to bypass the legacy systems that cyber teams have been putting in place for a while. And they've been using these tools and trying to catch up and bluntly, it's not working. Right. What we're seeing is the percentage of successful attacks is over 80% are new and novel. The percentage of damage being done is literally on the orders of trillions of dollars. And even the personal liability that CISOs themselves or the executives in charge of cybersecurity programs face, that liability is getting to the point where it's almost criminal. And so it's a very important problem. Most folks probably realize when you think about it, how much of our society is tied to digital things working, whether it's banking or communications. And so if those things go down, a lot of damage can be done and sometimes even worse than that, than economic damage. So that's what we're seeing from our customers, our clients, and just the market as a whole is how important cybersecurity teams need new tools in order to, fight and combat what's coming at them.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what was the traditional approach to, detecting these attacks, and then how does Mixmode do it differently?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So, for the last, couple of decades, the cybersecurity industry has been built on top of this notion of rules and signatures. And so a rule is where you basically define, I don't want this thing to happen. I'd like to be notified when it is happening and I want to, go investigate and potentially stop it. So an example would be, I don't want a bad guy to exfiltrate a bunch of data from my environment. So when someone downloads more than, let's say 10 gigabytes of data, I want to stop that. I want to go take a look. Well, the problem is that over time, we're downloading more and more data. So either A, you've picked a number too low and you're going to get what are called false positives every day. Because, hey, someone in marketing is downloading a large campaign and that zip file is large. And so I have a cybersecurity professional, a SOC analyst, go investigate that. So that'd be a false positive where you take their time away from investigating real events. Or conversely, the bad guys realize that 10 gigabytes is the limit and they just download 9.99999 gigabytes and stay underneath that threshold. So rules are fundamentally good for policy enforcement, saying I don't want you to do this because of policy. But as far as actual cybersecurity detection, it's very easy for the bad guys to find out how to get around those rules, especially if they're public, especially if they come from a standard set, they can just come up with an attack that gets around it. The AI powered tools are accelerating the ability for cyber criminals in order to advance that art and be, polymorphic would be a fancy way to say it, which is be dynamic and how to get around those rules. And the close cousin to that would be signatures, IOCs and indication of compromise, CVEs and things like that. And so these are just documented dictionary that the cybersecurity industry has said is if you see A, then B, then C. If you see this signature, this pattern, that is this type of attack, and let's go ahead and stop that. And obviously, this is a really important pillar of the cybersecurity industry. They're called threat feeds. And there are ways that we can all share knowledge in order to find known attacks. And so we have to have those things because known attacks are represent a high percentage of the volume of attacks. But the problem with those is kind of similar where the creators of some of this either malware or cyber attacks are finding ways to modify that signature. And so an example would be we saw SolarWinds was a pretty well tracked event in the cyber industry a couple of years ago. And basically it started with this technique called beaconing, where it would reach out and it would do it every certain amount of time, let's say 20 minutes. Every 20 minutes it was reaching out saying, can I connect to the world and get something from HQ of what I want to do to this organization. Well, the bad guys, we would say the signature as an industry is 20 minutes. The bad guys would go, let's do 19, let's do 21, let's do 18 and a half minutes. And they would just kind of, meander around that point and making it so that tools struggle to widen the aperture of detection against those known signatures. And that's because it's a very hard problem in order to do that effectively. Because again, just like with rules, you widen the aperture too much, you're going to have false positives. You make it too narrow, you're going to miss, and then damage is going to be done. And so to the question of what do we do from a mixed mode perspective that's different is we're using a very unique AI approach in order to build an evolving understanding of each of our customers' environments automatically, and doing that at high scale and high velocity so that we can understand and predict what's expected in an environment within a given context. So that would be a time of day, a day of week, a certain entity talking to another entity, sending email between marketing and engineering, and how data flows through the environment. And with that understanding, be able to take observed data from that environment and compare the two. And so predicting, hey, here's what was expected, this is what we're seeing, and seeing how far that deviates, we're able to assign a likelihood that this is not expected and it merits investigation. And be able to do that at very high scale. And so basically, it's taking the problem and flipping it on its head and saying, really, the job is to understand what's expected and do that, which happens to be very difficult, by the way. But be able to do that in such a way that we can say, hey, SOC team, security team, this merits investigation. Let's go take a look. And so whether that is marrying that with additional information from a known attack perspective, like threat feeds and things like that, which is great, or more likely, being able to say, this, we haven't seen this before. Let's take a look. It could be something that is a novel attack. And I would note this also includes the absence of expected data. So this is kind of another kind of interesting concept, which is if we're observing an environment and that environment has backups every, let's say, Thursday at 3 p.m. and then Thursday at 3 p.m. comes up and no data is moving for a backup, our system will say, hey, something's weird. I expected something to happen and it didn't happen. That could be someone in the IT department, tripped over the power cord and whoopsie, that's not a big deal, but it was a thank you for telling me. Or it could be actually the bad guys turning off backups before they do a ransomware attack so that they can do more damage. And so sometimes, the something being suspicious is needs to be taken to the SOC team in order to find out the maliciousness of it. And that's what's resonating with our customers, especially those that take security seriously, whether they're banks and cities or even on the federal government side as well, where they have to have security and prevent these things from happening.
Interesting. And something you mentioned at the beginning, are the cyber criminals now using AI to start cyber attacks?
Yeah, there's a lot of indication of cyber criminals and maybe even more so on the nation state side as well, leveraging AI in order to not only create attacks, but also commence attacks. And so what's happening with the creation of attacks, this is actually noted by the NSA, where they're using tools like ChatGPT or things like Copilot and basically feeding it existing known successful attacks that the industry knows how to handle and saying, write me something like this that's slightly different or different enough that it avoids detections. And that just means, okay, we're going to reconfigure this and change the profile or the silhouette or the signature of this to avoid detection. But ultimately, the bad guys know that this is a valid what would be called the TTP or technique or whatnot. So that aspect is very dangerous because it basically opens up an infinite surface area for signatures to be created. And so the signature approach and the rules approach cannot keep up with that. It's also, what we sometimes refer to as the infinite regression problem, which is the what about this, what about this, what about this, and kind of the turtles all the way down, if you're familiar with that story. So, that's a thing to get a gut level understanding of why rules are good for policy, but rules are never going to make it up, and signatures are never going to make it up when it comes to detection. When it comes to commencing attacks, obviously the poster child for this would be phishing attacks, being able to automatically create something that sounds real. We've also seen recently, just this last week, documentation of a financial attack where an AI was being used to create live video and also audio to trick someone in the financial department to transfer funds. We've seen other examples of AI voice coming over the phone and saying, "Mom, Dad, I've been kidnapped." It's generative AI on the audio and video side, and let alone the tech side, is going to make it very difficult for organizations to just take something at face value. And so, understanding what is and is not normal, what is and is not expected, is going to be a very important tool in order to prevent damage as much as possible from being done for these type of attacks.
I mean, that's amazing. It sounds like the cyber criminals are ahead of most companies in terms of implementing AI. I rarely see companies using AI to that extent. So that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot going on out there, and and that's the most advanced stuff. I mean, there's still the aspects of a upset employee doing an insider threat, or an upset employee, or more likely an employee losing access to their credentials, and that being accessed by a group in order to gain access to organization, move laterally, and do as much damage as possible. And we've seen examples of that in over the last couple of years. And so that's where you need to understand that, hey, this person in engineering does not do that. So let's go ahead and take a look. Or this person in IT does do that, but they don't do that either at this velocity or this time or in this context. And that's a very, very hard problem unless you have the right science in order to do that. And so that's another thing to note is, underpinning AI is different tools, right? Different tools for the job. And so a lot of the conversation over the last year plus, which has been great from an AI industry perspective, and obviously a lot of excitement, really is tied to a certain area of science, let's say, so neural networks and whatnot. And for us, we're using a very different branch of applied mathematics, something called dynamical systems, which is purpose-built and suited for large-scale environments and automatically understanding what is and is not normal, where that data is going, from a time series perspective. And so that's a fundamental difference. A lot of vendors that are using AI in a variety of different areas are really just taking something off the shelf. They're taking some ML tool, maybe from a cloud provider, or they're taking something, like a GPT tool, and saying, "Hey, I'm just gonna wrap this around my detection and put a, maybe a nicer dashboard on an old beat up car." But fundamentally, the detection's not gonna work, and there's really reasons for that. It's not just, "Hey, I can make it up with effort." It's, fundamentally, it's an interpolative technology. It's a labeling technology. So neural networks are, the easiest way to talk about them, and kind of the canonical way to do that would be image recognition. So if you put in nothing but dogs and cats, pictures of dogs and cats into a neural network, it can only think in dogs and cats.
Right.
If you ask it, like, is this a giraffe? It's like, I don't know. It looks more like a dog, right? And so that's fundamentally what's happening in these technologies, right? And LLMs are obviously an extreme version of that, and kind of the poster child of generative AI this last year. But what it's doing is it's automatically deciding what the next word in a sentence is going to be based on its predefined, pre-trained, I guess is a better way to say it, set of training data. And so you can see why hallucinations and other things happen with LLMs. A hallucination is when an LLM just picks something that statistically was possible and then just keeps going in that direction, even if it's not factually correct.
Right.
And it doesn't understand, like it truly doesn't know. And you know, my favorite example is when you ask an LLM, is this word, is this excuse me, is this number a prime number? And it says, no, it's not a prime number because it's divisible by 13. You're like, okay, next question. Is this number divisible by 13? It's like, oh, of course not, right? It doesn't understand the two aspects of things. And so a lot of what's been happening is these buttressing and bracing around an LLM to try to squash out as much as possible. But that smells very much similar to what I was just describing for you know, previously with rules and signatures. It's this infinite problem, infinite regression problem. So LLMs are great for helping for natural language processing and communication and translating English and maybe into a query language. And that can be a helpful tool of kind of lowering the training bar for tools. But generally speaking, a lot of the cyber industry, I think, has been selling that LLMs are the right tool for detection. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's another thing that we like to talk to you know, clients, and especially the more advanced ones, when they dig into the science aspect of things, they get to that aha moment with us going, ah, I now understand. And then when they try it, they go, now I get it, and kind of off we go.
Right.
Yeah.
There's actually a question that I was going to touch upon is it sounds like your ideal buyer is a CISO in an organization, or at least that's probably where you start. Is that right?
From an economic buyer perspective, yes. And then, you know, SOC professionals and security architects, you know, are technical champions and operators.
Right. And so in our experience working kind of in this industry, it seems like a lot of the CISOs, just because of how specific threat detection is as kind of a component of overall info security, that they're not equipped or don't have the right level of skill or bandwidth to be able to manage this internally. So how much of your time is spent on just education around why the tools they have today doesn't work, education around AI, and just kind of making people comfortable with the new technology. I would love to hear a little bit more about just kind of the adoption.
No, it's a great question, right? You're always fighting of the sins of the marketing past of other organizations. And obviously the word AI didn't suffer from a lack of use for many years. And so, you know, it really depends on the organization, right? The more advanced the organization, the more they get it. The more that they're seeking out tools that actually work. They maybe even have an internal AI team that has tried to tackle certain problems. Maybe achieved on some and haven't gotten there on others, and we're able to show value very quickly and say, hey, let us handle this problem for you, and work with the security team. So those higher level organizations, the ones that are kind of seeking out you know, increased security and addressing kind of existential threat, it's more of the conversation of, okay, how does this differentiate? You know, why do you think that this is going to perform better than some of the other things that we've dealt with? Or they say the tools that we tried literally can't handle the amount of data that we have, like period, full stop, right? It doesn't matter if it worked or not. It doesn't, but it can't scale. So when you're dealing with literally hundreds of millions of records or billions of records, you know, on a daily or monthly basis, you need to fundamentally do something different. And so just scale alone can also, you know, open the conversation. You know, as we go down in organization size, and now you get to get into more resource constraint, and you know, CISOs are trying to juggle so many different things in order to do what they need to do from a compliance standpoint, do what they should do when it comes to increasing security for their organizations. You know, they have a lot of expensive tools already in place. A lot of them don't work. And they're dealing with kind of the budgetary headaches. And what we're able to have a conversation about is, look, you're probably understaffed. You're struggling to find equipped SOC analysts that can come in and actually fill those roles. So this is a tool that will help you from an efficiency standpoint, not only handle the scale of data, but also be able to highlight of the millions of things that you may be annoyed with by other tools. Here's the small subset of them that you should focus on. An example was when Log4j came out and obviously hit the industry, and a lot of organizations all got hit overnight with that discovery. A, we were showing a customer in one example pre-CVE, pre-signature activity of like, hey, something weird is happening with the machine. We don't have a name for it yet. But we wanted to, highlight that the pattern, the way that this machine is, this entity is at interacting in your environment, doesn't match what we expect. And then when the signatures came out for Log4j, we were able to take that massive alert cannon that everyone was subjected to, which is everything under the sun needs to be updated, yet nothing can be updated. So I'm just going to bother you every 5 minutes, and not really be helpful. We're able to say, hey, wait a minute, you have this alert for Log4j. We're also seeing this machine is acting weird. Let's put these two together and say, that's the machine, that's the entity that you need to go focus on right now. Number one thing to go do. And so that efficiency and prioritization and precision is what resonates with organizations that are doing the best they can when it comes to the resources they have available to them. And so, from an education perspective, it is fair to say that over the last year, the interest in the topic of AI has gone through the roof. And for those that want to go past skin deep, we have some really, fruitful conversations explaining, why you want to have the right tool for the job, right? You don't use a hammer to put a screw in the wall. That's a bad idea. So if you want to use an LLM, that's great for that. You want to do detection, that's where we come in and use dynamical systems in order to do that.
Cool. What companies are in your ICP? Who do you primarily target?
Yeah, so basically, companies that would be, the sweet spot for us would be companies that have, large amount of data, large organization, financial, institutions where obviously it's so critical to have cybersecurity, just from an existential threat perspective. Municipalities, large critical infrastructure. For example, City of Phoenix and City of Dallas are customers of ours. And also, we've had conversations on the federal side as well. Where you're dealing with the most serious kind of situation, and also the largest volume of data where. Some of the numbers that we're being asked to look at are very, very impressive. So, and we're very excited about those engagements.
Do you see any? I was actually just speaking with someone about the use of AI in their product, and his thought was actually it allows them to expand their TAM because you don't necessarily need an expert to be able to manage the software. And have you experienced something similar?
Yeah, we've definitely seen that organizations that would normally need to go get a large SOC team in order to handle their environment not need to do that anymore. They can have a smaller SOC team, a smaller security team, and use tools in order to like ours in order to equip them as much as possible. It's the old adage of a 10x developer. We can have a 10x SOC analyst where they're able to get a lot more done, and be more successful in their career themselves, by adopting and leveraging tools, right? It's the old adage, you're not going to be replaced by AI, but you're going to be replaced by someone who uses AI. And so that's true today.
Right. Interesting. What, in terms of just implementing just more broadly, not so much in cybersecurity, but in terms of just integrating AI within your organization, I mean, your chief strategy officer, do you have any tips for organizations as they look at their product, as they look at, how they enable their employees to be more effective with it? Is there anything you guys have learned through your experience with AI?
Well, it's a double-edged sword, just like anything. The first one is organizations need to understand, if the AI tools that they're leveraging, especially those around LLMs, if that's going to be a vector for any critical data to be leaked from an organization. A lot of times, when you're saying, "Hey, LLM, fix this chunk of code for me," that's proprietary code. you need to know where that's going.
Right.
And so that's critical. And that's a very common topic with a lot of our customers and partners, of them wanting to understand what's being used to train this thing, where's the data coming from, and what happens to my data when it touches, some of these tools. So that I think that's the first key is, there is a levering aspect that organizations can benefit from using these tools, obviously. But it depends on where it's being integrated into an organization. From a generative AI perspective, to have better, copy for some, blogs, or maybe bang out some code from an engineering perspective. It's a double on the code side, it's a double-edged sword, where you can get accelerated development and probably do a lot of boilerplate work that normally you'd be paying maybe a lower level, developer to do, and you kind of get it, as bug free as possible. But you also need to make sure that there hasn't been any sort of targeted attack inside of the auto completion for code, right? And there's examples out there of bad guys trying to lower the security in code so that they can put known vulnerabilities. Like, don't use the latest version of this encryption, use an older version so that I know how to break it. And if a code if the code developer just says autocomplete and it uses the old version, they just put a vulnerability into the system. So obviously, through the lens of security, we're always here to say what the bad thing the bad news is. There's that aspect. But clearly, AI is going to be a tool in every toolbox, just like software has become a tool in every toolbox over the last couple of decades. So that's not going to change. But fundamentally, understanding that sometimes these things can be very confident but wrong can cause problems. And so people need to use these tools with both eyes open.
No, that's terrific. I mean, you have a wide range of experiences. I believe you're CEO prior to this. In general, what do you think makes like what are some fundamentals to like growing a successful company based on your experience?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing is, what value are you giving customers? What friction are you removing from their everyday life? What value are you delivering, or delighting them with? And so, for what we've seen from a mixed mode perspective is, when we're able to plug it into an environment and very quickly show value, and then, dramatically reduce the amount of headaches that they have to deal with, and then have that confidence that those novel attacks that you were worried about that everyone else is missing and are so hard to find, you now have another tool to help detect those things. So, going back to the question of, how do you build a successful organization? It's one, what value are you giving customers? What friction are you removing from their lives? And the second is, what are you doing that's unique? What's defensible? A lot of the companies that jumped on the bandwagon of, I'm just going to wrap ChatGPT and have some vertical, solution focused on that. Like, hey, I'll make something up silly. I'm going to be the number one, birthday balloon order, LLMs, right? It's like, okay, cool. But, second that a platform of that scale opens up anything that looks like an app store, or anyone else can do it over a weekend, that's not defensible. You need to have something that you're doing that isn't just different for different sake, but is better and unique. And so the intersection of those two things are really where, we've seen and we know and we believe that powerful and valuable organizations can be built.
That's terrific. Did and is there anything just based on your experience, this is a question I like to ask, is there anything that's gone against the sort of conventional wisdom or something that was like was be missed in a B school class? Like you learn all this stuff in business school, but the real lesson is something you learned like in the school of hard knocks of business. Is there any takeaways like that?
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's a topic in business, but maybe people, forget about it, which is just the importance of building relationships, in order to be able to bring your product to market. That's the key. At the end of the day, people are buying stuff from people. And so, like, It's easy to kind of think that, oh, I'll just throw up a website and it'll be great. Like, that's not going to happen. That can happen, but it's not going to happen. So I think, understanding the importance of building relationships, the importance of delivering on what you say, and being credible, and being a valuable partner, are super important to building organizations, that it's worth at least reminding everyone about that.
Absolutely. The relationship management was in a major topic in my business school, so it's definitely a good point to bring up again. And looking at 2024, is there any, I mean, obviously AI, you can't miss it. I feel like every company is at least putting it in their messaging at some place, though. We deal with a lot of different clients, and a lot of them are not, like to your point earlier, are not really doing anything with AI. It's just a buzz term, which is, it's disappointing, honestly. It's like we it's just not, I feel it's been a
There's no central better housekeeping seal of approval that's controlling language. And so that's a thing. And different markets suffer from it differently. Cyber suffers from it pretty extremely. And so it's very we're very empathetic to those on the cybersecurity buying side and the operations side, of just the morass of language that they need to go through. And it's tough because, almost all the words in the English language have already been used. So,
right.
like, you can't invent a new term and have people expect to understand it per se, and then vice versa. It's how far down the rabbit hole do you want to go to understand what we're talking about? And you shouldn't have to do that, right? But what we've seen is those that are willing, and we have those conversations, they get to that aha moment very quickly, and then kind of.
Absolutely. So the last question is, I mean, I think this is really like the best time to be in business. There's so many exciting technologies, things like that. And so that's just it for 2024, even beyond that. Is there anything that you're really excited about? Anything that's like come across your desktop, even if it's not something that's tangible at this point, but anything that's on your radar that gets you excited?
Well, I mean, there's definitely the kind of post-hype cycle of AI. Broadly speaking, we're starting to see those tools that are coming out that are going past just textual and visual. There's always that good and evil aspect of those things. I gave some examples at the beginning of the evil side. But as far as being a tool for those to create, and for those to go faster and be more efficient, and be more accurate, is pretty exciting. The democratization of the further democratization of being able to create either software or content or whatever someone wants to do, I think is pretty exciting as always. And those tools are only going to continue to increase. And so the ability to have a computer in your pocket is already here. Now it's a question of what is it that you want to achieve, and having the tools to do that kind of on your own is a concept. And just the low we're getting to the lowest bar of kind of capital and resource needs in order for someone to start something. It was already pretty low. It's going even far. So from that perspective, that's pretty exciting when you have a massive set of economy, just from that aspect of being able to grow, I think is pretty exciting in general.
Very cool. Actually, I lied. That's not the last question. The last question is Chiefs, 49ers, or are you interested in the halftime show?
That's a great question. I have to be very conflicted on this. Here's the way I phrase it. I live in Seattle, so I'm a Seahawks fan. I did grow up in the Bay Area as a Joe Montana fan. My dad is a massive 49ers fan, but my youngest son is a big Chiefs fan.
Oh,
So it's a little house divided. I
dear.
have to be they're a diplomat this weekend. And so we'll kind of see what happens. But I think those are probably the two teams you'd want to watch this year. I know some other folks had some other picks, but it should be a fun
The ratings should be huge. I mean, with Taylor
watch.
Swift. Well, hey, thanks for your time, Matt. I really appreciate talking with
You
you.
got it.
It was great to get some insight on mixed mode and the impact of AI and cybersecurity. It was really terrific. So thank you for your time.
Well, no, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Great talking to you.
All right,
Thank
thank
you.
you.